Filmball! Don't you sing over my singing. Yeah, Filmball. Welcome to the Filmball to everyone. That is Anderson. Yeah. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts for today. Top 5 bar fights. How have we not done this one yet? We didn't really fight. I guess we have fights in general. Fight scenes.
We did fights. I pulled that list, both yours and mine, so I'll go over those.
What other fights could there be? I mean, like, what other fights can we do pop topics on? Family fights?
Family fights, not bad.
Might be one on my list.
County of Osage County. I could just do Osage County, like 1, 3, 4, 5.
Did I mention there might be a family one on my list?
I'd have a different one, a different movie for two. You see. Mm. Different. You got clips?
No clips. They're all very visual.
I got two clips.
Aren't they very visual?
No, there's a lot of lead up to some of them. In fact, my favorite one with the lead up, I almost went clip, but it would have taken too long, Ryan.
Are they all traditional bar fights?
Just straight down the middle. If it turns into a shootout, I'm out. Right. It's got to be fisticuffs.
Yeah.
It's got to be, you know, a bare knuckle. Maybe some accuser involved.
But do they all take place in bar or pub?
Yes, Brian. Okay. Yes.
Mine are in a couple of different places, but they're all bar settings.
There was a couple that I almost included, but I'm like, hey, is that a bar? I see them drinking, but like one in particular involved Jackie Chan, but it was like a gang hideout.
Okay.
I wanted to include it just to make fun of the scene. I mean, it's bad times, Brian.
You're going to have to stretch your imagination with a couple of mine.
Why would you do that? When this category is so robust.
If anyone asked these people and these characters in these scenes, hey, where'd you get into that fight? They would say a bar. And then they'd explain a little more.
Okay.
So,
okay.
They all fall in the category.
Hey, we got business
to take care of.
Yes, we do.
What do we have?
It's your brainchild. So, why don't you step up to the plate there, sir?
Where's my brainchild?
Oh, I got a little movie.
Oh, the life thing.
I got a little movie that's going to be world premiering up in Redwood City, Silicon Valley.
Talked about the beer.
March 9th. That's a Saturday, everybody.
It's the heart of San Mateo County.
March 10th, it'll be playing the following day at 5 p.m. in San Jose at a very large, beautiful, historic theater that holds 1,200 people. So you can see it either one of those days, or you can see it the following Friday playing March 15th back in Redwood City. So it's playing at Cinequest all three times. Thank you very much, guys, for leaving comments and making the movie seem as important as it possibly can, because I'm looking at it feels like Groupers is the only one getting comments. So why don't we keep that trend going?
Nice,
that'd be
kind of
cool.
That's good.
We have like 110 comments and
everyone else
has, we have 10 comments right now, but it'd be sweet to have 100 plus, you know what I mean? And have nobody else have comments. Anyways, Brian said, hey, I'm going to be up there. Thanks, Brian.
I am. Yeah.
It's in his backyard.
I booked my non-refundable flight.
It's in his backyard. It's where Brian grew up. And
I grew up in the next town over.
And he's coming out. And then he said, hey, you know what we should do is maybe we should think about doing a live show. Well, I took the ball and ran with it. I got a lot of experience with the private screenings that I did over the summer. And we got in touch with a guy who Brian claims to be a fan of something.
He claims to be a fan.
Of?
I think he listens to the show.
Of the program.
Yeah.
So I got in talking to Lou. Long story short.
Of the Giants.
Long story short, we have secured ourselves a tight little space
at a
brewery. I don't want to give out the exact the space at the moment because I can't remember. Devil's Canyon in San Carlos.
In San Carlos, the home of, the birthplace of, well, not birthplace, but the hometown of Catherine Bigelow from Zero Dark 40. Mm-hmm. Also, Paul Bryan.
Zero Dark 30.
Did I say 30?
You said 40.
Oh.
It's Zero Dark 30.
Oh, it is 30.
Yes. Yeah. Near dark is where you should have gone. Anyway, so from 2 p.m. till 5 p.m., we have this space. What are we going to do in this space, you ask? Brian and I are going to be there. We're just going to be hanging out of the bar, like looking like schlubs.
Do you think I should show some home movies?
No,
the town of San Carlos?
I don't know if you should. Okay.
There was shot right in that very town?
If you could do some editing, I don't know if like sit through like really boring
this
shit.
This is 8-year-old birthday party.
So as here's the plan right now. 2 o'clock, doors open. We start checking people in. If you want to come to this live event, and then I'm probably going to show one of the shorts. It sounds like Brian's going to be showing like some bathtub movies of himself as a child.
I had moved there in fourth grade, so
I'm going to show.
I showed a bathtub.
I'm going to show one of the shorts, like a 6-minute short beforehand, and then right around 3 o'clock, we're going to begin the program. We're going to actually do a live film vault.
It's going to be very annoying to the other patrons.
It could be. We're going to record it and we're going to, I asked that. That's my final question to Lou. I said, now are random schlubs going to be sitting at the bar annoyed by us? So I think that our space is a little bit private.
He said probably.
I think we got a private space. And then we'll be a regular episode that will go up in the feed, which will be great. And then when it's all said and done, before as we end the show, I will encourage you to stick around and I will show The Cult of Carano. on the screen there.
Oh, so fantastic.
It's going to be an event. It's going to be a great time. Come on out. If you'd like, $15 or how much the tickets cost to help us, because we had to pay for this and we have a bar minimum again, which is always scary for me ever since I that bit me in the ass in San Diego. Mm. I remember I had to pay $1,200. Just out of pocket. Yeah. So we have a bar minimum.
Oh, good news though. If you're a Patreon subscriber,
it's $10.
$10 yeah. ticket.
So I don't know how exactly
get your $5 monthly fee worth.
I don't know how exactly I'm going to work that out as far as proof and whatnot. Mm. But you know, just if you're Patreon, click on the $10 link. So there's going to be links on my website, AndersonCowan.com. You'll have access to do PayPal, which can, you know, allow you to do a credit card, or you can do Venmo if you like. I'll give you a couple options up there.
It probably makes so AndersonCowan.com is where we'll send people.
Yeah, we can go there. We'll put it. I'll put it on Venmo, and we'll have it on AndersonandBrian.com too. But so if you want to come out, if you're going to be out there anyways for the world premiere, thank you very much. Let's make an event. Let's make an event day. So
this
2 to 5.
And by the way, if you're if the 9:15 p.m. Screening of Groupers, which you should absolutely go to. If that's too, you know, too difficult for you, if 9:15 just doesn't work on a Saturday for some reason, you got kids, the 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock thing in the afternoon in San Carlos, accessible by all points in the Bay Area.
And how far is that from a Redwood City?
It's 10 minutes, if that.
Okay.
All right. Very close.
And then, you know, there's plenty of options to come out and see Groupers if you like. It's also playing, like I said, at that giant historic theater, the California Theater.
It's the Westwood to Century City.
Following day. So let's have some fun.
This will be literally a homecoming for me.
This is
I'm
the
very
first
excited.
Screening that I've been involved with, obviously, that I have no idea behind the curtain. Like, I have no idea how many people have bought tickets. A number of you have emailed me or tweeted me and sent me messages one way or another saying I got a ticket.
Sales, right.
But I have no idea how many people have gotten tickets for this, for the actual screening.
But
so
please come out to our live hit at Devil's Canyon, buy Anderson a beer, which he probably won't finish because he's trying to remain.
It's my world premiere that night, so I got to stay sharp.
I'll drink your beer.
But you know, I am going to have like 4 hours in between, so maybe I can go like back to wherever I'm staying and sober up a little
That's
bit.
That's a good point because our event will end around 5 and your screening is at 9. Plenty of time for people to get dinner if they'd like to, get changed.
Right.
But
there was a lot of discussion about the time.
You know where San Carlos is, right across the San Mateo Bridge or the Dumbarton Bridge.
People are going to be coming in from out of town too, Brian. So
I'm name dropping bridges.
Okay.
I'm name
So let's get to Bar Brawl. But before, let's get to a little flick fashion.
Anderson, I'll be honest, this will not be one of my finest episodes. I explained to you my first aid emergency last night.
Oh my God, Brian. Brian burnt his little hand and he's going to say that he didn't have time to watch movies.
That took up the majority of my evening.
That was last night.
No, I saw the movies. I didn't dive deep into the research.
Oh, I see.
But the good news.
So it's going to be like business as usual.
That's right. So I'll be top leveling it. The good news, Anderson, 2 movies I saw that you saw. So you'll be able to help me out on this. Mm-hmm. First.
Don't count on it.
Well, you'll be able to. I didn't say you would. 3 documentaries I saw this week. All very, very good.
Oh, jeez.
What? All very, very good.
I ain't got problems with narratives. Why can't we talk narratives?
Well, I'm trying to catch up on some of these Oscar movies, such as Minding the Gap.
Minding
the Gap.
Mending that gapper.
Minding the Gap is a 2018 film directed by Bing Liu. It is 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It is also nominated for Best Documentary. It takes place in Rockford, Illinois. About two and a half, three miscreants. The third guy is the guy behind the camera, Bing Liu. But it's about...
It's mainly about those two guys.
It's about Kier and Zach. Kier is...
Delightful.
He's a black fellow whose name is spelled K-E-I-R-R-E. Like Pierre, but the I in here
backwards. Was it Kier or Kier?
No, it's Kier. They said it many times. Like Pierre, but they misspelled the I. Anyway.
I'm giving you all this shit about your 3 documentaries. I look at my list. I got two documentaries.
Perfect. Uh-huh. And Zach is his lifelong friend. Zach is white, and he opens the story. His wife's girlfriend, I should say, is pregnant with their first child.
Braggers.
And he's a young man. Yeah, maybe early to mid 20s.
They're younger than that, I think.
He seems underemployed. Zach is. He's a roofer. But not like, you know, as an owner's own business. He's scraping.
Skates really good though.
Yeah, and they connect over skateboarding. And initially, I was a little bit resistant to this documentary because I don't have an affinity for skateboarding.
I've heard that a lot. A lot of people think, oh my God, another skating video? I don't want to watch this. I don't really like the skate culture.
And there was way too much skating. But
what? kidding. Skating was great.
The story and the interaction between Zach and Kier and Zach's girlfriend and the director Bing Liu and his mom.
Right.
A lot of things unfold. This story,
it takes a left turn, pretty hard left turn around the hour mark.
I don't know if the left turn's hard.
It's hard, dude.
They all have this thing in common that the documentary kind of Hoop Dreams-ish, and then it's ostensibly about this sport and about these kids trying to be good at this thing, but it's really about their life and their struggles and what life is like in Rockford. Rockford is apparently not a great place to grow up.
Yeah, I got a buddy of mine. He lives, I think, 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes from it. Not too far from it. He goes through it all the time. Mm. And he tells me he's not a big fan of it. Aaron, my buddy Aaron Kessler. He says it is as bad as it is in the documentary.
Like, there you go, dropping names.
They're not pulling punches.
Zach's the kind of guy who when he describes how his adjustment is going for about his wife, his girlfriend's pregnant, and the adjustment to having a kid, he explains, he's like, hey, you're gonna have to grow up, man, can't drink a 12 pack every night.
What's true?
Well, it's true, I mean, if you were drinking a 12 pack every night, perhaps you weren't prepared for fatherhood, which ends up being the case.
The first hour of this film, I was kind of like, okay, I've seen this movie before. This is like a watered down version of Kids, right? It's similar characters. It's like a documentary version of mid-90s, which is a very watered-down version of Kids from the mid-90s, ironically. And then there's this, I don't know why you're not giving this to me, but at around the hour mark or so, the movie's pretty far along when all of a sudden Bing Liu starts being more present. And he throws his mom on camera, and she's the only non-skater other than the girlfriends. She does not belong in this world. We realize that it's his mom. And he's kind of like putting her on the spot on camera saying, hey, how are you cool with your new husband, my stepdad, beating the shit out of me when I was a kid? And she's exceptionally uncomfortable and starts crying. And that's where it really took a turn. And then it began. Then Bing Liu came out and started saying, hey, this movie, the reason why I'm making this is because I'm trying to get to the bottom of like domestic violence.
I'm totally with you. I didn't feel like it was a hard or semantics, because either way, the movie does take a left turn about an hour in.
My biggest problem with the movie.
Felt like it eased into it because all three of the boys had this in common. Right. It was amazing to see
them. It was pointed out.
In a micro sense, I understood the skating world a little bit more, and that these kids looked at skating as an escape. And, they had this common thing. Of course, they love skateboarding, but they also, had this troubled home life that made them want to spend more time, flipping their boards off of stairs and not, at home.
Skating culture is so much different than like organized sports. And I've done both. And I was in both worlds. I had one foot in each world. I wanted it to be full time in the skating world, but I had a militant father who demanded that I play organized sports. So I was doing that until I got severely injured and couldn't move on. And those were the glory days. That's when I really went off the deep end sophomore year in high school when I couldn't play the organized sports anymore. But it's a totally different culture. And, it attracts a much different individual, for sure. Usually more individual thought is occurring within that group, but usually anti-authority and, all damaged goods. I don't think any of my skater friends were like... they came from a nice home.
Right.
We were all damaged goods.
To that point, these kids are all sort of, fit that description. This around that mark, this sort of ceases being a movie about skateboarding. It almost abandons skateboarding.
Exactly.
It becomes very much in the background.
It becomes a different movie.
Yeah, a movie about the cycle of abuse. The interview with the mom, like I said, was super compelling. It's a really good documentary streaming on Hulu. I don't know if you can get it anywhere else.
Hulu's got it all locked up right now. I'm imagining that they'll, maximize their efforts. Yeah. I don't know how they're going to actually play this, because they might just play hardball and be like, hey, if you want to see this movie that might win Best Documentary, especially if it wins, can you imagine?
I don't think it will.
Neither do I.
It feels like it's a very, very good, but a long shot.
It didn't feel like a really well planned out and executed documentary. Mm-hmm. A lot of luck occurred here. The kid knows what he's doing. He's a good skater and he's good on the camera. But
it was very fortunate that he was friends with the two subjects because he got them to open up a lot.
Honestly, without Kier, who was the black kid that you mentioned earlier, without him in this movie, I like this movie half as much. Like, he was a lot of the movie for me. He was such a great character.
He's engaging.
Very engaging. And his plight, as like the only black dude in his group, it showed him hanging out with his brother a little bit, but then his brother turns out to be a piece of shit.
His brother stole from him.
Yeah. So, but like, there's that.
And he was like trying so hard to like keep it on the straight and narrow. You know what I mean? Like he's got the troubled home life.
There's that one shot where, and they don't need to really allude to it, and it kind of comes and goes, but it really stuck with me, where like his friends, There's a girl and a couple other, like, all white dudes, yeah, all white dudes, I think. And they're watching some YouTube, like, viral video, and like the N-word's being thrown around left and right.
Yeah. And they're laughing, and he's just kind
of... And Kier's kind of off to the side, like, kind of uncomfortable. Like, how am I supposed to, you know, really...
It was really funny.
So that's what sticks with me more than anything else with this, and his personality. I love that kid.
The other moment,
I love that kid.
The moment that sticks with me more is also about Kier, but it was the, you know, the footage of him as a little kid early in the film where I think his brother's kind of messing with him, like maybe like beating him up a little bit or bullying him and knocks him down. And Kier obviously, fueled by this, you know, tumultuous home life, is impotently trying to smash a board. He's just jumping up. Yeah. He's a little kid. He's like 8 years old. You know what I mean? So he can only do so much. And he's just trying to get all his rage out, trying to smash his board. Eventually, his rage gives in a little bit to embarrassment. And he's like, because in front of a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And so like now he's like trying to smash the board because he's been trying to smash the board. You know what I mean? Yeah, like first it starts out rageful. Then it's like, shit, people are watching me.
Now let's just have fun. Yeah. I'll be like the rodeo clown.
A little bit.
What was the name of the other guy? Scott? Zach. And Zach, you know, piece of shit guy, but he's got, there's something about him. He's got it that like, you can't hate this guy. He's got charisma. He's got charisma and you feel for him. But you know, you put that on a charisma free fuck, you know, the same behavior. Right. And like, you're just like, oh, that kid's a piece of shit.
This documentary does a good job of making me sympathetic towards a person like Zach, who I normally would not have much sympathy for, but
I think he did that himself too, just by being himself.
Right. But they explain his backstory and you're like, yeah, this guy's struggling. This is also a picture of a young man, you know, growing into adulthood. He's struggling with, you know, should he be involved in his kid's life?
Yeah.
How much, if at all?
Right till the very end, I liked him too. Like when he's fucking around on his work site and that old guy passes him. And you remember that? The very end? I think it was during
like,
the credits.
It's always like, there's liquor in this. Is that one?
No, he was in an alley.
And
some like older guy, he just like walked by and gave him a dirty look. And like, he kind of looks at the camera and he plays it to the camera like, ah, what do you get there?
Oh boy, look at.
All right. Very good documentary. Minding the Gap. It's kind of a shame that it's, you know, locked up on the Hulu over there. But I know a lot of you listeners have the Hulu. So
they have a 30-day free trial, which I'm currently in to watch Minding the Gap. So
I did it also to watch The Clovis Killer, and they pulled. It's no longer there.
I watched something else on Hulu.
The Clovis Killer is now gone, Brian.
I don't know what that is.
Mm.
The Fyre Festival documentary?
That was it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Also, this just in, I had planned, big plans, Brian, to come in here and talk a little, the House Jack Built, a movie that has long been on my radar. I've been meaning to watch Lars Von Trier's 2.5-hour saga with Matt Dillon playing a serial killer. And it's supposed to just be gruesome and awful. And there's a lot of controversy around it. When my wife first heard about it, when it was playing at Cannes back in April or May or whatever it was, she forbid me from ever watching it. Obviously, that doesn't fly with me. I will watch this movie. Lars Von Trier, of course, director of many films, namely Antichrist, which is a recurrent theme on this show. However, in my digging, last night, I was going to try and squeeze it in last night before the show. I know 2 nights ago, I realized, oh, look at this. The truncated version is available right now for rent for $7. The full version is supposed to be released in June, which has four and a half grisly minutes inserted that were originally there he had to pull to make it, get the R rating. So if I'm going to go deep, if I'm going to go head first into this fucking thing, which I'm not looking forward to, even though I've been told that I'm going to love it. If you look at it as a comedy, perhaps, I don't know. I'm not going to half-ass it. You know what I'm saying? I'm waiting for the full thing. Yeah. So I'm not going to watch that one until June, probably.
So that was a non-fliction?
That was a non-fliction. I did see a film though.
What's it?
They Shall Not.
Oh, this is a sign to you.
Grow old.
We both saw it, so let's talk about
it. They shall not grow old.
That's right.
I was very excited that Brian assigned this to me.
Mm-hmm.
Been wanting to watch this one, and it's been eluding me because it has not been playing very very many places. And it kind of pops up and goes away. It pops up, goes away.
Limited runs.
You see this 3D or 2D?
Regular.
Good.
2D.
That's 2D, yeah. I did too. I had to drive many, many towns
a
over.
A little digital manipulation was enough.
Yeah.
I didn't need more.
I don't think the 3D would have added a fucking thing. I don't know why they're doing that. Anyhow, it's a documentary about World War I with never before seen footage to commemorate the centennial of the end of the war. The war was what, 1911, 1918? Something along those, I think it was like 7 years.
Was it that short?
It was 7 years. It
was that long? I mean, sorry, that long.
Maybe, yeah. I'll look it up while you wax. Scenes.
Was it? Is it? So is Peter Jackson the credited director?
Yes,
because he had the little preamble before at my theater. Did he have it in yours?
Oh yeah. What do you mean? Is he the director?
Well, no, because someone else shot the footage. Obviously.
Well, yeah.
I don't know if he's a credit. I didn't stick around and watch the credits.
What's that movie? The Senna.
Ayrton Senna.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, I understand. I didn't know if he took directing credit on this one.
He absolutely did. Okay. They assigned him. They said, hey, look, we got a bunch of historical World War One footage in our annals, and we want to do something special for the centennial, but we're not sure what. Why don't you go out there
and do something.
Yeah. So he thought long and hard, and the idea that he came up with was what we saw, which was to colorize it, bring it to life, and I'm not surprised, but I'm very disappointed that you didn't stick around for the 30 minutes that preceded.
Yeah, I had to go.
It was a mini doc where he explained.
I was tempted.
It was as good as the documentary.
Oh, really? Damn it.
It was fantastic. I'll tell you about what you missed afterwards.
All right. So Peter Jackson has 98% of Rotten Tomatoes. Curiously, not nominated for Best Documentary. Did you do research into why? I heard they didn't submit it either in time, or they just didn't submit it. Either way, not up for Best Documentary, but could have definitely been a contender. I found it to be more Anderson of a fascinating exercise than a less than compelling story. Like, it's not the story is loose at best. It's as an exercise, though, fascinating. Like, I really was interested. I was compelled. I couldn't take my eyes away. Like, so, and like Anderson alluded to, they didn't just colorize it. They did that, of course, but they also slowed it down to like the right like frame rate, so you're not watching like people like walk by a Babe Ruth fast
motion.
These
were shot on cameras. The World War One footage at the time, the technology was hand cranks, so it was very hard for cameramen to actually crank at the right speed. What we all see and know today is 24 frames per second. They were over cranking, under cranking. They're all over the map, and Peter Jackson and his team were smart enough to say that's one of the big problems that separates the viewer from this actual footage and these people.
You don't feel like you're watching real people.
These humans is not only the black and white, but also the speed. It makes it seem slapsticky and old and it's not accessible. So once you slow it down, and he went into detail about that in this 30-minute doc that I'm assuming it's going to be available once you can rent it and whatnot.
I'm sure
that would be part of the package.
I think it's still exclusively theaters now, but they also, the good thing they did was added sound. Obviously, yes. There's no sound back then.
They went into the Foley realm as well with the doc that they did, after that you walked away from.
Did they have lip readers? I have to assume
lip
they
readers.
Did.
They had lip readers, and it was fascinating because Peter Jackson, giant World War One aficionado, like that's another reason why they picked him. He has like actual World War One like armory, and like a lot of the Foley stuff. They're like, where are we going to find like a gun like that? And he's like,
you.
Oh, I got you. I got something similar. Hundreds of of uniforms in his own personal collection. Big World War One guy. So. He was a smart choice. Now, one of the problems that I had with the movie is the movie is told in voiceover as well, which was good. I like that a lot. And they actually
dozens,
if not,
I assume they recorded in the 50s,
close to 100 infantrymen from World War One who, like Brian said, they were interviewed in the 50s and 60s in the same archive. They have all this tape, these reels of these actual interviews. So they
very
went through and they listened to 600 hours.
Very casual at the descriptions of the horrors of war.
Well, yeah. I mean, it becomes like second nature, I think, right?
Well, it's also stiff upper lip, the whole British thing.
The voiceover, yeah, and that's another thing. I didn't realize that it was going to be primarily told through British soldiers, which I was fine with. So he
I don't think Americans were involved in World War One.
What?
I don't think were Americans involved in World
How
War One.
How in the fuck would we be back-to-back World War champs if we weren't involved?
That's a really good point,
Brian. Of course we were involved.
That's stupid of me.
All right, listen to me.
That was a brain fart right there.
No, let's not say that word. All right. So one of the problems that I had with the movie, while it was unfolding, was, all right, show me some more stuff. I know there's a whole lot of stuff that happened in World War One. I'm getting a little bit tired of these folks. Oh, what I started to say, sorry. Huge World War One aficionado, Peter Jackson. There's this one piece, you probably won't remember it, even though you saw the movie, I wouldn't remember it if I didn't stick around, but there's this one piece where this sergeant is like talking to his men, and he's like reading off a piece of paper, and he's actually speaking. You can hear him saying he's saying. Right. And Peter Jackson's like, oh, I've seen that footage. I've seen that piece. Like, you know, dozens of times growing up and being a World War One like nerd. But I never heard what he was saying. And yes, they brought in lip readers.
Wow.
But they couldn't even read this guy's lips. But they're just going through the annals, and they found a scrap of paper that with that date from that footage.
Wow.
And they read it, and they looked at it, and they're like, does it match up? I think this is what the guy's saying. So, yeah, that was a
damn,
great
I wish
little,
I had Sarah for this.
The little 30-minute, I thought it was going to be a lot of technical bullshit, like, and then we use this color. And there was a little bit of that. Like, he was talking about how the grass was the hardest thing to color, which was interesting. But, no, that was as interesting. So I should say the footage looked good, but it didn't look so good that I forgot that I was watching really old footage. You know what I mean? I mean, it still looked weird. It was off a little bit. They did the best they could, and it looked much better than what we're used to seeing. But I didn't think, oh,
it was as though it was still a very good animated movie in a way, I guess.
But it did make me see them as real people. Yeah. And most of them were like rubes. Most of them were like, you know, uneducated, really young, a lot of 15-year-olds in there. So I was getting tired of like the same story, not the same bunch of guys so much, but it was all like British infantrymen on the ground, and it was all leading up. And he explains that he did that on purpose. He was showing some footage of planes, and they had a bunch of like submarine footage at sea. How cool the planes looked. You know what I mean? Yeah. I want him to make another version. He said he wanted to try and tell a story, keep it on the ground and keep it like with one group that had one, you know, mission to which it all led up to. He tried to tell it in a traditional style, which I understand the thought process there. I would have liked to have seen more shit though.
Yeah, I agree. But I liked it very much, and I found it to be fascinating, and I would like to even see like an extended TV version series of this. You know what I mean? Like CNN or something, BBC.
Yeah. I mean, they did that with World War II. They recolored that a few years ago, I remember, and that was like stunning. But 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. I can't imagine anyone giving this a bad review. Like,
who's not down
kind of
with
a dick would do that? Yeah. It was a feat for sure, and definitely worth watching. I'm very glad that I saw it. I
hope there's more of this kind of stuff. I have one more movie. How many more do you have?
I got two, so I guess I'll just go. Okay. World War II looks like started in 1914 and ended 1918.
World War One
is what I meant to say.
Oh, thank God I wasn't the stupidest thing on the show.
Cold War, Brian! Cold
damn, where'd you see this movie?
War. The comfort of my own home.
Oh, give it to me.
The comfort of my own home.
I need that right now.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Blah.
I have to see it though.
I also would like to say this fucks up my plan. I had a really great plan, Brian. I was going to watch Cold War, A Private War, and A Private Life all in the same week to give it like that bloody simple plan vibe because I need to see all three of those. Right. I would like to see all three of those in the next couple of weeks, but I squeezed Cold War in instead.
Okay.
I'm going to have to see Private War and Private Life in the following weeks.
Now, I've been meaning to track this down because it's nominated for Best Director.
This is up for Best Director, Cinematographer, and Foreign Language Film. It is directed by Paweł Pawlowski. He directed a little film called Ida, which I saw a couple years ago. Same tone, different vibe, but black and white as well. I don't think he shot that one 4:3 as far as the aspect ratio goes, which is the box, which gives it that old
TV feel.
Mid-90s was shot 4:3. A ghost story shot 4:3. This is a love story. A music director falls in love with a singer and tries to persuade her to flee communist Poland. To go to France with him. He is much elder. She is played by Joanna Kulig, and he is played by Tomasz Kot. And she pops. She chews the scenery. She is reminiscent of Lolita, Susan Lyons of Lolita. She's just very blonde. She's got attitude from the moment you see her on the screen in the beginning. So what it is it's the Cold War, Brian. Okay. It spans many years. One of the problems that I have with the movie is they look pretty much the exact same through the 20 years.
It's a short movie. Hour and 20
scant.
Minutes.
Scant.
Nice.
This music director comes into town and he's putting together a show in this quiet little like a Polish town, and he's getting like some of the actual people that live in the town to come in, and it's essentially American Idol but back in the 40s, right? And he's immediately smitten with her, and like the girl, the woman that he's you know, casting with, she's kind of giving him shit like, why do you like her so much? Yeah, I think I know why you like her. You're smitten, because he's much older than her. Long story short, they're together. And, you know, it's kind of frowned upon, and then they're also behind the Iron Curtain. So they're trying to get out. But my takeaway on this movie is she was fantastic. I loved her. She just had it. Like, you hated her one minute, you loved her the next. She was just a cold bitch, but I think she was real.
Is it worthy of Best Director nomination?
No.
So I have to, it feels
this
can like
be one of the five best directed movies.
Does it feel
absolutely
like this one edged out Bradley Cooper for,
For sure. Bradley Cooper, what he
Stars
did.
Stars Born?
This is a very, very typical Oscar Academy Award nominated stuffy black and white artsy
foreign
yes this keeps this gives them their street cred or their bourgeois cred, right? With a movie like this, it's a well crafted movie. I enjoyed it. It wasn't made for me. I'm not pining to ever see it again. But she was fantastic.
All right. Do I have to see this? Do we have to see this, the Film Vault audience?
I would say no. Now, I'm sure there's a couple people out there that loved it. But no, I mean, as far as, you know, it's all about what a movie pulls out of me, what it invokes in me. And like this one just didn't really get me other than her. And he was okay. And the ending kind of was like, really? That's the end you're going to have? Yeah. Yeah. Well directed in the sense that he was working in black and white and he was up in their grill quite a bit, but I like,
a little showy. It sounds like, I mean, just the black and white aspect and the style you're describing is very
what it is. Like you kind of like melt into it and you're like, okay, this is the kind of like, it's not derivative of other things. It is its own thing. And the camera work is really good. But you know, it's playing for the art world constantly.
Yeah.
I do feel
like I have to see this.
Whereas like A Star Is Born, like it just got into my head.
Yeah.
Deep. All right. A Cold War.
Speaking of great camera work and well-directed, I saw a very cinematic film earlier today. Still with me. Still right fresh in my head.
No crossover then.
Well, you've seen this already. I don't think you liked it maybe as much as I did, because I remember you saying good things, but I quite enjoy Free Solo.
Yeah,
Free Solo quite a bit. Free Solo was sweet.
Yeah.
Free Solo.
You see it IMAX?
I saw it IMAX.
Tight.
At the Century City.
Tight. Yeah. It takes a while to actually use that IMAX. I'm like, all right, let's use some IMAX, baby.
I don't remember the last movie I saw in IMAX. I feel like I don't see very many
Dark
in
Knight?
IMAX. Maybe. That would have been 10 years ago. This was magnificent filmmaking. This is
Jimmy Choo.
But Jimmy Chin.
Chin. Jimmy Chin.
Jimmy Chin and Elizabeth Chai Vashar-Heli? Mm-hmm. Vashar-Heli? Vassar Helgi.
You fucking nailed it twice now.
They directed Free Solo, sit at 98% of Rotten Tomatoes. Again, who has a problem with this movie? Nominated for Best Documentary. I haven't seen all the other nominees, but this was a remarkable cinematic achievement. I was enveloped, engrossed. I mean, it's a very simple will he, won't he kind of story, because it's about this dude who wants to free climb, like you said, Al Capitan, gigantic peak in Yosemite. And he's a bit Asperger's-y. They kind of get into that a little bit. He's very into free climbing and not much else.
Driven.
Not really into his girlfriend. Not really into his home life.
Girlfriend bug.
Not really into having anything besides his van and his shoes that he can climb with.
Right.
But his
spatula that he can eat with.
And it's right. He's routed the pan.
Yeah.
How did he not burn his hand? So anyway, Free Solo is really well done. It really benefits from IMAX. I recommend this movie. I recommend seeing it on a large format screen. I normally wouldn't, you know, care one way or the other, but this one will envelop you. The music was fantastic. The score was wonderful.
Here's something to think about, though, because this has been bugging me ever since I saw the movie, and it's just there's no getting around it. But technology gives us what we got to see, which was IMAX footage of this insane person climbing El Capitan without any ropes.
And the filmmakers are a big part of the film, too, because they're his friends, and it gets into the life and death aspect of
and
this
how
course.
They don't want to be a part of it. They don't know what they'll do if he does. They don't want to like be cause it, obviously.
They're proxy for the audience in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they are. Yep. So, but because of this technology, we get this, you know, magnificent footage. But because of technology, we all know that he didn't die. Imagine watching this movie not knowing if he lives or dies.
How would one, I mean,
it's impossible, but imagine the experience then. Imagine how great that movie is. Yeah. If you are like living and dying on each of his little moves when he does decide to start to walk.
You have to suspend your knowledge a little bit for this, but even still, it is a.
There are people out there that watch it that probably have no idea if he lived or died.
Yeah, I'd imagine the majority,
and
actually,
they probably got to really enjoy it that much more.
Yeah.
All right.
It was very cinematic. I really enjoyed it, and one of the movies that I will demand that if you're going to see this, it's up to you whether you see it or not. But if you do see it in the theater, preferably on a large format screen, you're not going to get the same filmmaking experience, film going experience as you would at home.
Brian, I have one final movie. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it because you have not seen it. Okay. And this is the type of movie that needs to be talked about by two people who have both seen it. Also, I'm going to suggest that the listeners watch it, even though it's not the greatest time of year to be watching a documentary that was made in 2017. That's not up for shit with the Oscars right around the corner.
Okay.
However, it's on the old fuck flicks over there. Right. I would like to maybe get you to watch this and within like a month or something, maybe soon after the Oscars, and we get at have a bigger conversation about Abducted in Plain Sight.
Ah, but the Netflix has been pimping this to me.
Have they?
Is this kind of a... I just dismiss this as like a true crime thing for
it
chicks.
Is a true crime thing, and okay. It's a fun right. One. Bob Berchtold?
It's very upsetting.
Bob Berchtold. Bob Berchtold. Bob Berchtold. Bob. Bob.
Bob Berchtold.
We hear Bob's voiceover early in the movie explaining how he met... He met the young Jan and how she had dimples, and she spoke to him and she looked him right in the eye, and it was at that moment that he realized, I'd fallen in love. I'd found the woman, the girl of my dreams. Wow. Problem is, Bob was around 40 and she was around 12.
That's a problem.
Bob was very persuasive, and it was a different time. If anything illustrates rubes, naivete, and a difference in decades and eras, it is this movie.
Okay.
Bob moves in, Brian. He moves in on his prize, which is Jan.
I don't like this.
And he befriends her entire family, namely her parents. And he gets into a position where they're fine with him spending the night in her bed with her, like 3-4 nights
a
week.
These people?
At one point he says, oh, my therapist, because I had childhood trauma, my therapist suggested I sleep in the same bed as a young girl. May I sleep in your daughter's bed? Oh, sure, Bob. You're a great friend, great family friend.
That is,
sure.
The things
that he does with the two parents is, and the parents, as well as Jan, I should say, are all part of this documentary. Wow. They're speaking directly to the camera. They're owning their rubidity. If that's a word, they're rubes, Brian. I haven't thought of the word rubes in years until I watched this documentary. I'm like, how in the fuck are they? Marianne is the name of the mom, and Bob is the name of the dad.
Oh no,
I didn't realize Bob and Bob. Anyways,
a lot of Bobs.
There's a scene with Bob where he's recounting something that he and Bob Berchtold did on the side of the road, and you're just like, what in the fuck, dude? How do you allow this? Idaho.
I don't know if I want this in my church.
And they're just naive. Mm. There's a turnip truck. Every scene with them, you could see the turnip truck driving over their shoulder. I go, away.
They sound very... They fell right off. Very, a little too trusting.
That's an understatement, Brian. Yeah, this movie is icky, but it's nothing like icky, like Just Evil.
Just Melvin.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable in the sense that there is this full-grown adults that could be this fucking naive, especially in light of today, how everyone's so skeptical and leery of their neighbors and whatnot. And this is a different time. It happened like in the 70s, I guess, maybe late 60s. But I highly recommend Abducted in Plain Sight. Brought it up on the After Disaster last night, and Tyler said, oh, yeah, I came home, and Lauren, my wife, had just watched this. Mm. Right as I got home, it ended, and she just looked at me, and she goes, I don't know what I just watched. I don't know what the fuck that was.
This in my life.
No. It's because everyone's scathed by the end, like mentally very scathed, but physically not. They aren't scathed.
Okay.
And they're part of the documentary, Brian. It's okay.
Okay.
And there's even by the end, there's even a little bit of like, oh, look at,
oh,
you stood up for yourself there.
Okay.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, Brian.
Rubes.
It's unfucking believable.
Top 5 rubes.
We already did rednecks, though. Rubes is different.
Rubes is different.
All right. That's my Abducted in Plain Sight. Oh,
coming
Bob.
Coming up next. We will go.
You think that Bob was like the second, like he was Jesus Christ or something. The way the amount of respect that Bob gets in this little town. And
did Jesus bed young 12-year-olds?
I mean, I'm sure that he could have if he wanted to. He was Jesus, you know, and he's J-Man. Bob just got away with like whatever he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Hey, I think I could borrow your daughter for the weekend. I'd like to take her out of town. Yeah, your 12-year-old. Yeah, that one.
I don't like this.
And then they get Bob's brother, and he's like, oh, yeah. My brother's always liked little girls. Problem he's got.
Rubes.
Rubes.
Coming next. Bar fights.
Next.
Oh, Anderson. Mm. Someone got a jump on their taxes. Someone clicked through and got TurboTax Home and Business and State 2018 tax software on our Amazon click-through banner at the top of AndersonandBryan.com. Mm. It's never too early.
Mm-hmm.
Never too early.
I mean, it's February.
It could be too early. It was like December. That's too early. You're not that making...
May is probably too early.
That's too late.
Well, but it's too early if you're looking next year.
I guess,
yeah. It's always too early, Brian.
Other things purchased on the Amazon click-through banner that's at the top, AndersonandBryan.com. Include 2 Bush Business Furniture Series desk with hutch and 2 drawer mobile pedestal, Apple Watch Series 4, Lacey Porsche Design 8 terabyte desktop hard drive, 5, Philips Hue White and Color Ambiance Decorative Candles. Samsung Galaxy S7 was purchased, as well as Velitas 100 square foot rubber top interlocking mat. I suppose that could be for your child to play on, or other or playground, I suppose. 8, Comelon measuring wheel. Oh, I want one of these for no reason other than one of those wheels you walk around with that tells you how far the distance something is on the ground.
Why would you want it?
I just want to know. It's one of the distance. How long is it from to me to my backyard?
Put it on a Fitbit and it'll tell you.
No, I want the wheel.
Get the wheel, Brian. Do yourself
Bostic
a favor.
Bostic roofing nailer. Oh, the guy Zach from the documentary could use that. Roofing nailer.
Yeah, he could have. Maybe he had one, Brian.
Maybe he had one.
My dad used to always say that to me. Anderson, you're bombastic.
You are bombastic, though.
I am not.
You actually really are. Just your defining characteristic.
Andy, you're being bombastic.
Sadie, big and tall office computer chair. Pro Gear Air elliptical with heart and pulse sensors. Enjoy your workouts. 4... Vanxi professional indoor-outdoor armored dome security cameras were purchased, as well as, I assume this is the same person, Urban Security Group outdoor weatherproof signal extender. Possibly the same person.
Vanxi does everything, huh? He's in home security
Vanxi.
Now.
Makita 18-volt lithium-ion battery, Taco cast iron circulator pump, the TurboTax I mentioned, Timberland men's Flume boot, Up 4 adult probiotic supplement, Carry on snowshoes with a pair of anti-shock snowshoeing poles, Trust Tech oscillating ceramic tower heater, Schlage custom hall closet and bed bath lock, Honest Kitchen. Hey, that's what Charlie eats. Honest Kitchen, human grade dehydrated organic grain turkey dog food. That's the exact same food that Charlie eats. Enjoy. Under Armour men's heat gear armor compression leggings, Wingspan Optics Explorer high-powered monocular, not binoculars, monoculars, and now the textbooks keep coming, America, A Concise History, 6th edition, combined volume. Thanks for the click-through, guys. Movie time.
Here in the movie, they'll click through the last time I saw you. Somebody clicked through and got themselves Tombstone. Smart move.
It's a good movie. Enjoy very much.
I prefer Wyatt Earp, but what are you going to do?
I've never seen Wyatt Earp.
What?
No, I've seen Tombstone 10,000 times.
In the Heat of the Night was clicked through. God.
Is Michael Biehn in that too?
Fuck to the yes. You like that Heat of the Night.
That's another one I haven't seen. That's Call
Plus me
here,
Mr.
Right?
Tibbs.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
They got the Criterion Collection, Brian. Gosno.
Oh, Criterion Collection coming out of the channel.
I saw that.
Filmstruck follow-up.
I saw that. In the Heat of the Night, Criterion Collection. Somebody also got Gosno, The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer.
That's right.
I don't know what that is.
That's a movie starring Dean Cain. About Kermit Gosno, the guy who was doing all the abortions.
Oh, Kermit.
Kermit.
I don't want to see that.
I know.
3 identical strangers, blind spotting, black like a Klansman, and a simple favor. A simple favor. Still not being seen by me. But
not seen by me either.
I'll see it one of these days.
Paul Feig, right?
Paul Feig doing a little dramatic comedy. Yeah.
It's a good comeback after Ghostbusters.
Those dramedies. Mm. He didn't direct that.
He didn't?
He doesn't have a vagina. He wasn't allowed to.
Oh, I thought I saw his name.
Isn't that
poster.
Weird? Like, we're going to reboot it for the ladies and bring in a man to tell him how to do it.
Catherine Bigelow wasn't involved? Probably not.
Oh, have we talked about the excitement that what men really want?
I'm very excited.
Uh-huh. I'm so sick of them rebooting old horrible movies about men and just switching the flipping switch.
You know, not horrible movie. What women want.
What women
wonderful,
really
wonderful,
want.
Wonderful movie.
I would never see.
Oh,
should I? Brian, stop it. Look at this. Stop it. All right, back to the program.
Hey, I'm Batman, and you're stupid. Bar fight time. I feel like I know the answer to this, Anderson, but have you been in a bar fight?
No, never.
What? Don't you lie to me.
Yeah, I've been in a number of fights, both in bars and out of bars, Brian, yes.
Some that started in bars and ended up outside?
Yes. Yes, I can name the bars, too.
Really?
Cisco's, Yucatan, those are the two that come to mind.
These places don't exist anymore.
Have you ever had to tell somebody, let's take this outside?
No, I usually make it happen inside.
Let's bring it back inside?
Yeah. It's where the ladies are. They like to watch.
Sure.
No, but I'm sure that there's others that I'm not recalling right now, but those are the two big ones. And it was one was me versus a giant guy. And it was a huge misunderstanding. I was in the bathroom at the Yucatan, and I heard these cholos were in there. They were going, all right, we're going to get the guy with the cast. All right. So on my move, like when I jump in, like you guys also start stomping him. And I'm like, that's fucked up. They're going to go after a guy with a cast. As I'm walking out of the bathroom, it's a loud bar. I see this really tall guy with a cast. And I'm like, ah, oh, that's the guy. I'm going to do him a solid. I'm like, hey, man, I just want to let you know that some dudes in the bathroom, they're planning on jumping you. He's like, what? I'm like, there's some guys in the bathroom and they're planning on beating you up. You want to beat me up? Let's go. And he fucking pushed me. And I'm like,
good
no.
Deed. No good deed.
I'm like, no. I was explaining to you. That story actually it goes on and on and on. We fought in the bar. We fought outside the bar. It was a giant ring of people out in the parking lot.
The confused cholos are like, who's this guy?
He fucking bit me. I had like a bite mark on my arm for the longest time. You could actually see the scar. Cops
long story
came,
short, you were kissed in the gang. You're handcuffed, you're still in the gang.
went our separate ways. The cops were cool, probably because we're white and it was a white town. So you know, we skated, and I'm walking home because I was there. And my friends had already left. I was there solo, so I was walking to my buddy's house, and a car pulls up. And they're like, "Hey, you're that guy that was just in the fight. Hey, we'll give you a ride." I'm like, "Thanks." I hop in the car. Turns out it was the dude's friends.
Oh no!
They take me to his house. He comes storming out of the house, punches me again. My hands are in my pockets. Punches me again, and then his friend's like, well, that was a dick move, so now they're against him, and he goes, they usher him back inside the house.
Why did they bring you to his house?
Because they wanted to set me up. No, they wanted to watch me get finish the fight.
But they didn't like that he sucker punched
you. It was round three, yeah, and I said, dude, I don't want to fight anymore. I see what's going on now. He took me back to the fucking enemy's house. I said, my hands are in my pocket. I'm not gonna. The guy comes running out. He was out of his mind. He punched me in the face, and they said, oh, that wasn't cool, dude. So they take him back inside. I remember he took a chair, and he threw it. I heard it go through the fucking window.
Jesus.
And then I walked away, and I'm like, I hope there's not a round four, and there wasn't. And then
if you're listening, a cast man,
Cisco's
please.
Was I got in a fight with. I can't even remember. Oh, that was another huge misunderstanding. Oh, so one of the bartenders, one of the cocktail waitresses there, I was friends with, right? And she was
sure,
cool.
Sure.
And it was towards the end of the night, like 2 a.m, and she was really upset. And she says these fuckers just ordered a bunch of booze, like a full round, and now they're saying they don't have money and they can't pay. Mm-hmm. And they had security there and stuff, but obviously security was like, you know, they were doing other things.
This is your job.
So this is now my time to shine. So I'm like, oh, I'll take care of it. So I go over to the table and I'm like, hey guys, you enjoying your beers? And they're like, yeah, we are. Who the fuck are you? I'm like, I'm the guy that's going to do this. And I took one of their beers and I started drinking it. And I also wanted a free beer. And I look over my shoulder.
Win-win.
I look over my shoulder like, yeah, you see what I'm doing for you, honey? You see what I'm doing?
And she's like, going, knock that table.
She's saying, no, it's those guys over there. And I'm like, oh. And I look back and I'm like, well, this is a huge misunderstanding. I put the drink down. And next thing I know, I'm just they're on top of me. My wallet's gone and my watch is gone. And then an actual security guard, I remember he broke it up. He lifted me up and he handed me my wallet and my watch. He's like, oh, you all right, Andy? I'm like, yeah, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, way to be on top of things.
Those are the two that I remember right off the top. I'm sure there's others.
Yeah. I've not been in a bar fight.
Shocking. Yeah. You almost got into a fight with that girl at that bar that you and I were at.
That's my move. Leaning, that's more my move to be passive aggressive.
Leaning against you. She's drunk, leaning against your car, and you're just going, excuse me, miss, that's someone's
vehicle. No, I did not say excuse me, miss. You and I were sitting outside the bar because you were smoking, and I was doing Simpsons trivia, and we're sitting outside the bar. You're like, I'm going to go outside and smoke. So we're sitting outside the bar. This drunk girl, there's just wobbling down the street and wobbles and like collapses onto my truck, which is parked right outside the bar, and she just kind of collapses on it, and I just mutter, it's only audible to you. I'm not even saying it to her. I'm just like, it's someone's vehicle.
You were so put out, too. She was leaning on your new Silverado. All right.
My new 8-year-old Silverado.
Before we get to it, I'd like to thank listener Jim for sending me a very nice shirt that just says mediocre.
It's pretty sweet.
And it's got Morton Joe's likeness on the shirt. So that one's in the wash. Can't wait to wear that one in here.
It's pretty sweet.
Thank you very much, Jim. And he also sent us a number of Smog City beers, which we will be consuming on this here episode. As well as Brian got a novel sent to him by Jason Runnyman.
I got a very...
Runnyan.
It just says Jason from SLC.
Jason so Runnyan from Salt Lake City.
Jason sent me a long letter, which
are
I'll
be
reading.
Are you going on vacation anytime soon? Or you can like maybe bring that and read it on the
hammock?
Yeah,
I got a coast-to-coast flight coming up. But okay, cool. I'll try and get through this.
Should bring the... It is a very long typewritten letter. And I thought it was to me at first. And then I saw at the top and it said, Dear Brian. And I'm like, oh, yes. And then I looked at the envelope. I'm like, oh, my God. It says Film Vault, care of Brian Bishop. I'm like, oh, fuck, yes.
Jason, we jested. I appreciate the thoughts.
There's no jesting.
I jest.
I feel like it was like a homework assignment got canceled.
Whose beer are we drinking?
A homework assignment got canceled. We're drinking Reno as Fuck, which was sent by another listener whose name is escaping me.
We thanked him on a previous episode.
Yes. Yes.
So thank you, dude, for the beer again.
Let's get into Bar Brawls.
Bar Brawls.
Let's do it.
I'm going to start off with a meat and potatoes one.
Do it.
Classic bar brawl. This is, you might think of a more iconic bar fight scene, Goodfellas. Mm. We talk about the movie a lot. So a similar themed movie, also starring Robert De Niro.
Mean Streets.
No, actually, I went with The Bronx Tale. A Bronx Tale is a great bar fight. Do you remember the bar fight in Bronx Tale where it's Sonny LaSpecchio's crew versus Satan's Messengers? Satan's Messengers are the bar, the biker.
What is the movie?
Bronx Tale?
Mm-hmm.
Satan's Messengers. They are the biker gang that pulls into town, and they're loud, they're obnoxious, and the mere sound, it's a great shot, because the mere sound of their motorcycles offends Chaz Palminteri, Sonny LaSpecchio. And
he was hearing the specials.
Just the cacophony.
He was sitting down at a restaurant hearing the specials.
It's just the cacophony of the motorcycles he's already put out. And they go into the bar that's owned by some friends of the crew, And they're obnoxious, and Sonny goes in there and he's like, "Hey, what's going on here?" And they're like, "Oh, this guy's refusing to serve us. We just want some beers. Is our money not green?" And he's like, "You just want a couple of beers?" And they're like, "Yeah." Like, "All right, give these guys a couple of beers." Because Sonny runs the town, right? He's the mafiosa. He's like, "Yeah, give me a couple of beers, and we'll be on our way."
Beer and a shot.
That's right. And no sooner does Sonny leave the establishment, he's not even left, he's like outside the establishment, they all in unison shake up their beers and douse the bartender in beer.
They're known for that.
And Sonny's not having that. So Sonny pulls what is a great trope, which will come up again in this list, at least on mine. He goes back in the establishment, closes the door, locks it. Mm-hmm. Now you're locked in here with me. And he says, "That wasn't nice." And then
now he's going nowhere.
Now you're not leaving.
Now he's not leaving.
And out of the back. And there's a great shot where the kid's narrating, and like the look of terror that comes over the biker's face.
We'll hear the narration later. Okay.
Oh, well, you say you didn't remember.
I was fucking with you, Brian.
Okay, well,
how could this not be on my list?
Okay, well, then we'll get to it later. Well, I wouldn't have gone this deep if you had been a little more forthcoming.
I watched you, and you kept digging. I would also like to say thanks to Clay Greer, who sent me an email a couple weeks ago suggesting we do this topic, and I was quick to reply. Thanks, Clay. I already did it. I just assumed that we had already done bar fights, and then I passed by you guys, and I looked in my research, and like, well, we have done top five fight scenes. I should also say top five fight scenes for Brian. It was Borat number 5.
Oh, you have mine.
Matrix Reloaded number 4.
Borat was a great scene.
3 was A Christmas Story. Ralphie versus Scott Farkas. 2 was The Book of Eli. Eli is everywhere right now. It's popping up all over the place.
It's a great movie. Weird.
Number 1, Saving Private Ryan, Stanley Mellish versus the unnamed German soldier. My list went down like this. The Killing, 1956's Stanley Kubrick's The Killing.
It's a hipster choice.
Maurice versus the entire bar at the track. This could have been on my list today, but it's omitted because it was already in the fight scenes. But this is my only bar fight scene from our previous fight scene
list. Was that?
That was The Killing.
That's right.
You've not seen The Killing.
No, the Kubrick film.
There's something wrong with
you. I don't like Kubrick.
Something very wrong with you. Number 4 was Raising Arizona High versus Gail Snoats in the trailer. Oh, it was good. John Goodman and him. Good fight scene. The Evil Dead 2. Ash versus Possessed Hand. He fought his own hand.
That's true. But he did.
Number 2, Eastern Promises.
Nikolai versus the bathhouse.
Two thugs in a Turkish bathhouse. Naked.
That's right.
Naked as Jays. And Old Boy versus a bunch of thugs.
That's a very good fight scene.
Side-scrolling down hallway.
Silhouettes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number 5 for me in this here iteration, the bar brawls. Treasure of the Sierra Madre, 1948. Get my hipster pick up and out of the way.
Hey, missus.
So it's Humphrey Bogart, right? Bogey.
I'm thinking of the African Queen. No, sorry.
Bogart.
No,
right.
That was a pretty good fight scene.
He and one of his chums, they're in a bar and they're drinking, and Boss Man comes in. They've been doing hard labor for this guy. And they're like, "All right, where's our money? It's payday." And Boss Man's like, "Oh, I'm a little skint. I don't have it this week, boys. Sorry, things have gotten in the way. And tell you what, I'll pay you this time next week." And they're both like, we know this tune. We are not buying this. Give us our fucking money." And he's like, maybe you didn't hear me. Why don't you just not take it now? Wait another week. How about you?" And he's like, "Oh, you trying to stiff us?" And then the Boss Man says, "Oh, I'm not like that, fellas. How about a round? He gets a couple drinks, and Bogey's like, "Are you trying to get us liquored up?" "Oh, nothing like that at all." And then Boss Man, I believe Boss Man throws the first punch. Like, he takes the bottle and hits the guy. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how it goes down. I saw this a couple days ago. And then the fight ensues. And it's a really good old-timey bar fight with the sound effects.
It is good.
It's like a ping pong match at one point. Bogey and his buddy are like just kind of like playing catch with this guy, like punching him, and then he goes this way, and then the other guy punches him, and then he goes back to Bogey and punches him. It was like a volley, Brian. It was really good. It was volley. Then he falls to the ground. He's literally groveling. Boss Man's now groveling, crawling away from the scene, like you see. It's very tropey, but he's like literally trying to crawl
probably
away.
Created the trope.
At that point, you just lay down. You just lay down. You just play dead like a possum, right? You don't try and fucking crawl away because you're going to get more. So, of course, they push him down one more time. They take out his wallet. Oh, not skint. He's flush, Brian. The man is loaded, loaded. He's got cash galore. What's Bogey do? Bogey picks it up. He takes out the full wad of cash. He counts out the money that's owed, throws the rest of the money down on beating boss
man. Not trying to rob you.
Not trying to rob you. Just trying to take what's owed. Just trying to take what's mine.
This came up on zero of my list for research, but damn it, if I didn't, what I should have done was look through my own notes, because I have it written right here under my notes for Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Pretty good bar fight scene, especially for the era.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And it's a good one to start with, too.
Damn it.
Good go one. Ahead. What
good
do you
one.
Got?
Good one. Next. 1996. Oh, this is a full and all brawl, and it's kind of one-sided. Actually, it's kind of one-sided, but the other side gets theirs in, too.
Gets
brawl at the Titty Twister from Dusk Till Dawn.
Isn't that like an hour-long brawl?
It's very long. Yeah. It's very lengthy. Robert Rodriguez directed From Dusk Till Dawn. This is the vampires versus the bar patrons. Well, formerly the topless dancers and the employees of the bar versus the bar patrons. They turn into vampires, of course. Once the carnage begins, did you watch any clips of this?
Oh yeah,
the band, also presumably vampires, they almost immediately began playing instruments cobbled together of human body parts, like they're playing a torso with like a leg stuck in the middle.
Yeah, they were quite quick on.
They were very quick on stringing together,
very handy,
stringing together a human instrument. But this is a wild fight where people are turning into vampires, and a few of the humans, namely George Clooney and Fred Williamson and Tom Savini, they get theirs, but they're outnumbered. Oh, they're outnumbered.
I do like that movie quite a bit. I love the first half. The first half is such high tension, and it's like a different, completely different movie.
And then
it unravels, and it's fun. And
it's fun.
It's almost like an early peek into what he ended up doing with... The Death Proof later on, right? With two separate movies, right?
Yeah, in a sense, yeah.
What was the
Grindhouse? Oh no,
Grindhouse.
Planet Terror.
Yeah, Planet Terror and Death Proof, but it was Grindhouse when it came out originally, right? Back to back.
The two films in one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Double feature.
Kind of like what he was doing there.
Yeah, I guess so.
And he directed the first half, and Rodriguez directed the second half.
That's almost like a de facto anthology film, kind of like Four Rooms or, you know,
Any the interest in seeing Alita, this new Rodriguez film?
I don't know if that's the one we're gambling on or not.
By James.
All I've heard is that one person tell me it's good.
James Cameron.
So that's more than I expected.
Hey, well, look at this. I discovered this in some research that I was doing for Cinema Dicks. Here's a fun little trivia piece. Christoph Waltz is in Alita.
You should be doing research on these films. You shouldn't be doing research.
I do research on every single movie that comes out every month, Brian, for Cinema Dicks. That's what I do, but I don't go on Rotten Fucking Tomatoes, all right? Movie Insider, Brian.
A lot of research.
Movie Insider is the name of the... They don't talk about critic reviews or ratings at all. It's just it's bare bones. It's
much more than I've done.
So, well, it's because you don't like movies. Here's a little piece of trivia. Christoph Waltz in this movie, Alita. What is Alita? What's the most notable thing about Alita?
She's a robot.
Giant eyes.
Oh, giant eyes.
Okay. Giant anime eyes.
Oh, big eyes.
Big eyes with Christoph Waltz.
That's right.
Weird. What German actor was in two movies with character or with...
that prominently featured giant
prominently
eyes.
Featured.
Women, young women, young girls.
Number four for me. Oh, I am excited that this one finally gets on the list. If nothing more to get... all of you to stop emailing me that I should watch this movie, because since it came out in 2014, I've been getting, you know, probably once or twice a month an email will come in from a listener saying, hey, have you seen this movie called The Guest?
Transformers 5.
The Guest, one of the worst named movies you'll ever come across, because it doesn't... I thought of it for this year list, and I'm like, what's the name of that fucking movie? The Guest is not a good name for a movie, Brian.
Is this about a bar fight?
The Guest is not about a bar fight. There is a bar fight in it, and it's fantastic. The Guest is directed by a guy named Adam Wingard. Adam Wingard, he's credited with like some of those ABCs of Death, and what's the other one that so many directors involved in
the
anthologies. But this came out in 2014. He made Blair Witch, the actual movie, 2016. Blair Witch. And then he's working on, right now they're shooting Godzilla vs. Kong. It's slated to come out in 2020. So this director is going to be a name that you're probably going to hear of coming up. He's also doing a remake of I Saw the Devil.
Really?
Just got announced.
Coming up again?
He's doing an American version, an English speaking version of I Saw the Devil. Holy shit. Anyhow, The Guest is a very... I guess, simple story. A stranger arrives and he knocks on this family's door.
He directed You're Next and VHS.
Oh, yeah, You're Next as well. And the VHS, he's one of the credited directors because so many directors are involved with those VHS. Yeah, You're Next is something I saw in theaters. So The Guest I did not see in theaters. I forget why or how I saw The Guest a number of years ago now, but once again, horrible, horrible title. But this war vet comes and he comes a knocking on this family's door and he says, "Hey, I was really close with your son who over there, and I saw action with him, and he wanted me to come by and, you know, check in and make sure you guys are good, because he's the son is no longer with him." Oh, okay. Then he takes out their younger son, and all of a sudden some shit starts hitting the fan in this small little town, and they think there might be a connection with The Guest, with this new guy who seems like he's like an anti-hero. He kind of comes out of the blue, like a noir. Like, you don't get any backstory on him. You don't know what his deal is.
91% Rotten Tomatoes.
And this bar scene is fantastic, and the lead up is so great, really? How it all transpires. But there was just no good soundbite to bring to the program, okay. So I'll just set it up for you. So please. He's in there with this young kid. He's in like a kind of a trashy bar. It's a bar that you would think is very trashy, but it's a run-of-the-mill bar. You're very very highfalutin and bougie with your bar.
Is selection. It a wine bar or a whiskey bar?
It's a beer bar, Brian. And he's in there with this family's like son. And mm-hmm. The family's son's probably like 17, 18 years old. And there's a kind of a rowdy group over in a booth across the way, okay. Right, in the bar. All high school kids. And they're kind of loud. Three dudes, three girls, maybe four dudes, four girls. And the bartender comes over and he walks up to the guest and this young kid. And he says, "Hey, you got ID?" And the guest says, "You got ID those people over there?" Mm. They're obviously underage, and the bartender pretty much says, "All right, fair enough."
And he goes, "You got me there.
All right, I'm going to have a Fireball," which is like Tabasco and whiskey or something, right? And it's before Fireball was not an actual thing. And my friend here will have a Coke, right, because he's underage. And he's like, "Hey, I notice these girls over here. They're drinking cheap beer. That's unfortunate." I should say, too, the guest is played by an actor that I'm not really familiar with named Dan Stevens.
I should point out that Dan Stevens, I'm on his IMDb page, is a regular on Downton Abbey, okay. And also was the Beast in the Beauty and the Beast remake. So
I assumed he was in some teen heartthrob shit.
And also in Legion, apparently. He's in
not
Legion.
In anything I watch.
Legion was pretty good.
Never seen Legion.
Legion?
TV show, right?
If it's not Patriot, I don't care.
I'm familiar with the,
So he says, I noticed these
he's
ladies.
He's the cobbler.
Let it go. I noticed these ladies over here, they're drinking cheap beer. That's a shame. How about you, do me a favor. Will you, I'd like to buy them all a round of shots of blowjobs if you do that for me. Send over blowjobs.
Sure.
And he smacks down a $100 bill on the table. And the bartender's like, "Seriously? You want me to do that? You know that's going to cause trouble." He's like, "Don't you want to buy the guy something too?" He's like, "I guess so. Yeah, why don't you send them over a round of Cosmopolitans?" Puts another $100 down, all right?
Good.
And he's like, "Keep the change." So now the bartender kind of has to do his bidding, right? Even though he knows it's not going to end well. Obviously, it's a great setup.
Right.
It doesn't go, it goes down exactly like the way the guest wanted it to go down. The dude comes over, like the two of them come over, and they're like, "What the fuck are you doing buying our chicks blowjobs and buying us Cosmopolitan?" And he splashes the Cosmopolitan in the guest's face. And then a very, very, quick and decisive strike occurs, and we see just how badass the guest is. And this movie, it keeps you guessing, and it's an enjoyable little genre flick, as you might say. The Guest, horribly, horribly titled The Guest.
The Guest.
I will forget what this is called later next week. The Guest,
my
number
movie.
Four. That was probably my favorite scene.
Terrible poster, too.
Yeah, the whole thing is just very misconceived. But it's a good movie.
Ill-conceived.
Not miss.
Yeah,
ill.
No, I'm not interested.
I don't know if they're going for like overseas market. I think you would like it, Brian.
I know. It's got a good rating.
It's a kind of movie like Bradley Cooper could have been in it, and it could have been a huge like hit.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have changed the name too, you know?
Not
so that's
guess.
My number. That's my number four. What's your number three?
Number three for me. So there's actually a more traditional bar fight scene in this very movie, but I went with a slightly more creative scene from the movie Legend, 2015.
Fucker.
Is it in your list?
It's my number three.
Is it Ron versus Reggie?
No.
Is it the actual bar fight?
It's the actual bar
fight.
Okay,
we have different scenes then.
Well, so yeah, they're not a bar.
At the nightclub, they are. When they fight each other, that's a bar in London. That's a London bar. It happens to have a stage, mm-hmm. but that's a bar.
Clubs work as well, as long as there's booze being...
Nightclub. So they're, in my scene, Reggie has gone away to prison, and he's just gotten out, only to find that his brother Ron, a loose cannon that he is... Well, loose cannons. Ron has run their nightclub into the ground. He has just
Ron and Reggie.
Chased all the clientele away. No one comes anymore.
Based on two actual twin brothers that ran amok in London in the 60s, and they were as they are in this film. Yep. Obviously, they're Hollywoodized a little bit, but this is a remake of an original film where I think the guys from Spandau Ballet played the brothers.
Yeah, they terrorized London.
Played both of them.
And Tom Hardy plays both. And in one scene, when Reggie, one of the Tom Hardy brother, one of the Tom Hardy brothers, gets out of prison to come back to see his precious club has fallen to disrepair under his idiot brother Ron's auspices. He comes back and is not too happy, and they a fist fight, and it's quite ugly, and they it's quite a fun little feat of filmmaking watching the same actor kick his own ass up and down, but it is a drag out brawl. These two brothers they have it out right in the middle of the nightclub,
and the rub is that one brother, they're identical twins, but one brother is like very calm and collected and smart and savvy, he's the brain, and then the other one's brawn, and he's like I think he's actually certifiable schizophrenic,
he seems insane.
Head case, yeah. And constantly flying off the handle, yes, but they're both
gay.
Badasses,
ironically gay.
That's part of probably what drove him crazy in that time and place, right? And with the machismo that he was trying to create.
But there's one more traditional scene in a British pub that involves brass knuckles, hammers, and Guinness.
It's true. You're kind of stepping all over my pick here.
I'm teasing.
Here's probably the problem with this movie, why I didn't love it. Because, I mean, it's got two Hardys. What more could you possibly need? I don't know if it had the appropriate director attached, a man named Brian Helgeland directed it. He's primarily known for A Knight's Tale and 42. He kind of makes that... that made-for-TV sheen stuff. This movie deserved a little more grit. A little more Scorsese treatment.
I remember this movie having great moments, but
maybe a little Guy Ritchie treatment, maybe even a little Matthew Vaughn treatment, even though that is more plastic than I tend to love. But I don't know if this was the right director. He's also a very good writer. He's got his fingerprints on a lot of big movies like LA Confidential, as Brian does. But this scene that I'm going with, it's got brass knuckles, hammers, ear biting, and two fucking Hardys. It makes for a great bar fight scene. And I got a clip. This is the lead up. This is the...
Was this another clip where they lock him in? This is another clip where they lock...
It looks like
God, that's a real thing.
Looks like Ronnie is the crazy one.
Yeah, Ron's a crazy one.
Ronnie's a crazy one. It looks like he's leaving because he just got insulted by these ruffians. But really what he's doing is he's going out to get some hardware, which is a couple hammers, and then come back and he locks the door. So it's two brothers, two Hardys against, I don't know, I think six or eight dudes.
It's a gang.
It's a group, a large group of people. And here's the lead up. This is Reggie. This is the cool, calm, and collected one going up and essentially, you know, laying all the cards on the table. Here it is. This is Tom Hardy in all his glory.
Well, Charlie Richardson said we're to knock the granny out of you, Reg.
Oh, yeah, he did he? That's good of him. Right, listen. When you see him next, you tell him from me, yeah, that I say, fuck Charlie, right? And fuck his brother, yeah? And fuck that fat Georgie Cornell that hangs out with him. Fuck your face, yeah?
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And fuck the fucking lot of you as well. What do you think of that, hey?
What do you think of that?
What do you think of that?
Oh, I love that. I love the accent. I love Tom Hardy.
That's good.
A little
snarky.
And then the fight ensues, and it's good.
It's brutal.
It's a good brutal fight. A little cartoony. I mean, there's many blows that you'll watch in that. If you were to actually go count, I would hazard a guess that it's like probably 20 plus blows that would be fatal. That just kind of
the hammers alone
have the effect. Yeah,
there's some kill shots hammers. In there.
Oh, man, that's what I'm saying. I'd say probably 20, 25 kill shots. And you know what? Instead, the effect is
it's a bit theatrical. Yeah.
So that's my number three.
All right, very good. This matched up, kind of. Coming up next, we will come back with the top two. Number one, number two. Bar fight scenes of all time. Next. Anderson, the Super Bowl is over.
It is.
But that doesn't mean the bet online is over.
Is it bad that I was rooting for boring? I thought it was hilarious.
You were the only winner then.
I thought it was hilarious. I saw where the direction was going. I'm like, this is so funny to me.
3-3 in the fourth quarter. BetOnline.ag is still your destination for all of your gambling needs.
Yes.
Including NHL, which is in
NHL.
Full swing.
Yeah. We got the trade deadline is coming up February 25th.
If you had to make a futures bet in the NHL, what team feel comfortable?
I mean, everyone would jump on Tampa Bay Lightning right now because they are the cream of the crop in there. But I want to sleep on the Winnipeg Jets. Of course, my Penguins are always a threat. You never know. And the Capitals could repeat. I mean, these are all strong, strong teams, Brian.
Didn't Vegas win last year, or am I totally
Vegas
out of
lost
it?
To the Capitals. Oh, yeah, that's why right. How the Vegas okay. would repeat. I mean, the Capitals would repeat because they beat Vegas last year.
Was Vegas not a good, very good team?
Vegas is, I don't want to spend too much time here talking the NHL, but Vegas was a Frankenstein team, Brian. They're an expansion team.
That's
and
right.
They took pieces from parts from all these other teams. And then the massacre happened, and that team really came together and galvanize the city.
That's right.
And there are kind of a lot of the time that happens in, you'll see it in the NHL quite a bit. Like somebody's, I got a team member's mom will die and then they'll win the cup for him.
Wow.
That happens quite a bit.
Wow.
Yeah.
So check it out at betonline.ag. Go there, use the promo code podcast1 when you sign up.
March Madness is right around the corner.
There's, bite your tongue.
If you're, you got the bug and you're still looking for gambling and things to bet on.
What's an action?
Because the football's over. Oh, don't you sweat it. There's a ton of stuff out there. The Oscars. You can bet on the Oscars.
Oh, you don't have to tell me. I'm fully invested. 50% sign up bonus when you sign up. Yes, a 50% sign up bonus when you use that promo code podcast1 O-N-E at betonline.ag.
Betonline.ag.
Guess who's back?
Shudder.
Not the things you close on your windows. No, nope. Shudder. Shudder. They specialize in, I'd say, horror thrillers, that kind of genre, but they have a wide variety international. That's where I saw, well, no pun intended, I Saw the Devil, assigned to me. I saw on Shudder.
I will be talking about I Saw the Devil later on this year, bro.
William.
Yeah.
Is there a bar fight?
If you have not seen I Saw the Devil, watch it on Shudder. I love that I Saw the Devil.
It's disturbing.
It is.
It's upsetting.
Just $4.99 a month. That's less than $50 a year, technically. Shudder has the largest, fastest growing human curated selection of thrilling and dangerous entertainment. The Netflix for horror is what they call themselves.
And here's the deal, guys. To try Shudder for free for 30 days, it's a whole month. Go to Shudder.com, S-H-U-D-D-E-R, Shudder.com. Use a promo code VAULT. And get 30 days free.
Yeah, guys, we throw
soak
around
up all the movies you can.
We throw around promo codes around a lot, and with quite a few different sponsors that we have. This one makes sense. It's no skin off your back. You get to watch a bunch of movies. Just set a reminder if you don't want to, if you're not sure about continuing your subscription. And this will really make our show the strength that it's got.
Yes,
Shudder it up, guys.
Shudder up. Power.
Use Vault to get that free month.
Shudder.com. Welcome back. Drinking some coffee. Porter, I should say. Porter. Port is a wine.
Thanks, Jim.
Port's a wine.
Sorry I called you Jeff earlier. I don't read too good.
Son of a bitch.
I don't read too good know-how. You know what that is? That's Big Harold in Platoon.
That's right.
Little Harold. God, it's been too long since I've seen that. Is it Little Harold or Big Harold?
Hey, speaking of which, are we doing a Steph Tracks on Clockwork Orange or the
I
other
think
one?
I thought we should put up a poll.
Oh, we're doing one more week of the poll. We got 1 week of the poll down with Patreon. We were going to announce on the show this week that the poll will be available on Twitter and Facebook for everybody else because we forgot to mention it last week.
Okay, cool. So vote if you'd like. What are the two options? Clockwork Orange?
There's four options. Clockwork Orange, the Bone Tomahawk, Brawl and Cell Block 99, and what was the other one?
Ghost Story,
yeah.
All four of those are streaming, so either on Amazon or Fruklix. So.
To me, there's a big drop-off after Clockwork Orange and Ghost Story. Those would be a top
currently
two
on
for
Patreon,
sure.
Clockwork Orange is the front runner.
Smart.
Wow. By a large margin.
Clockwork Orange and a Ghost Story are the only two on the list that are my top 10 of all time.
That's amazing.
It's pretty good.
Top 10 of all time.
Yeah. Bone Tomahawk's probably top 100, top 200 at least. I love that fucking
movie. I like Brawl Cell Block 99 better.
Because you're dumb.
I'm dumb for liking it better?
Yeah, I mean, it's a poor thing to say and believe.
Okay, number two.
Go ahead.
Okay, we're going to go first?
All right, wait, right? Yeah, that's how we've been doing it. Right?
Whatever you want. You can go first if you want to.
I love this bit.
We haven't done this in a while. Number two, Scott versus Roxy. Scott Pilgrim versus the world. Scott versus Roxy, directed by Edgar Wright. The scene, directed by Edgar Wright. This is Scott Pilgrim versus the World, of course, where Scott must fight Ramona Flowers' evil exes. Mm-hmm. And this is his fourth opponent. Technically, this is not a bar. This is a concert after party, but they are at the bar when this whole thing takes down. They're mm-hmm. like they're at the bar, this after party. Technically, there's a very funny reveal. Do you remember this very well? I saw this movie.
I liked this movie a lot. I got a lot of shit for liking this movie a lot.
No, you did?
Yeah, really? People say it's a hipster movie. It did not age well. People do not like this movie.
Oh, I like this. This is a fun movie.
I think this and like Napoleon Dynamite are two of the movies that take the most shit on
No.
A lot of people give shit to
this. I hear a lot of people that still like this movie.
It's a great movie.
Myself included.
I remember when I saw it in the theater, I was like, I need to see this at home so where I can like slow it down because there's so much going on. It's a cacophony of sight and like images.
So the idea is that Scott Pilgrim must fight, literally fight video game style, this new girlfriend's league of evil exes, and he keeps referring to them as ex-boyfriends, and she keeps suddenly correcting him by saying exes, and he never picks up on it until fight number four, when his opponent is Roxy Richter. Apparently Ramona went through a lesbian stage at one point in college. She calls it a phase, which enrages Roxy even more, and there's a funny internal animation of Scott's brain going from the meter that goes from clueless to gets it. It's a very fun tongue-in-cheek movie. At one point, Kieran Culkin's there at the after party and he screams, "Kick her in the balls!" It's just a fun movie.
I like that Kieran Culkin fight. I miss that Kieran Culkin.
Where are you, Kieran?
Where'd he go?
He's on that HBO show, Succession.
He's being ruined by a show again.
He's done a lot. He's doing a lot of stuff.
We're losing.
He was on that fish show. He was on that. It was some show about fish or something.
Blue Planet.
His brother, one of his brothers. I'm drawing a blank on the name right now.
Rory.
Rory Culkin is in the Lords of Chaos movie that comes out later this month, which was on my Sundance preview from like a year ago, 2018 Sundance. Or it's all about the Norwegian death metal, black metal. True story.
If you had asked me in 2010 or 2011 when this movie came out, what percentage of our audience had seen this, I would say upwards of 80, 85. I'll bet it's not aged well in the sense that I don't think a lot of people are like saying, oh, you got to see Scott Pilgrim. Like, I wonder how many of our younger viewers maybe have seen this movie. It's a really good movie, you guys. Enjoyable.
I bet a lot of younger people watch it.
How young do you think our audience gets?
10.
Not that young, but I imagine we attract new listeners as years go on, possibly from a previous generation. Yeah. See, if you haven't seen it, guys, fun movie. I recommend it highly. Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Number two for me. Already been discussed here. A Bronx Tale.
Ah, sorry, I stepped on it.
Also, listener
suggested
that we do this one. Clay Greer, this was his de facto number one pick. Not de facto, but he stated that in his email. Like, you got to do bar fight scenes. My number one would be a little movie called A Bronx Tale. Yes, this fight scene is fantastic. It's got such satisfaction involved in it because these guys are such dicks. Yep. And it's kind of like the new...
They had it coming.
They had it coming. And it's kind of like the old time gangsters versus like the young up and coming, like, you know, the new style of which was kind of new then. Yeah. The biker gang was kind of new in this time because it's like the 50s, 60s, late 50s, early 60s, right?
Yeah. I think it's the 60s.
And
it's a sort of doo-wop era.
So it opens up, as Brian kind of talked about earlier, where, you know, Sonny and Lilo are just trying to have lunch, and they're getting the specials from like the manager of this restaurant that everybody, it's a small town. They all know each other in the neighborhood. And he's like, "We got a beautiful Prosecco." And then these bikes come roaring by, and you can just see Chaz is just pissed. And De Niro directed this.
Great
direction. Cause I can, then we go outside the establishment. We can see both of them kind of trying to look through the door at the loud cycles as they roar by. And then they spin back around. They go into the bar. Brian set that whole thing up. And then what's great is, like, it's kind of like with Legend. I can't believe we have two of the same picks.
Unbelievable.
Bastard.
Maybe number one's the same, too.
And because there's so many bar fights. So Chaz starts to walk out. And they think, yeah, that's right. Yeah, get the fuck out of here after they're talking shit. And he just goes a long walk to the door to close it, lock it. And it's just him at that point. It's just him. And, like, Lilo, what's Lilo going to do? Lilo's a little punk kid. Yeah. And he goes, "Now you ain't leaving," or "Now you ain't going anywhere.
Now you can't leave."
And then the back door opens, and like all the good fellows were back there playing cards or what, God knows what shit. You know, they're maybe cutting some garlic with razor blades. Who knows what they were doing back there?
It's got to melt.
They come
in the
out,
pan.
And De Niro, this was the first film that he had directed. He did The Good Shepherd later on. Right. But some of the editing was kind of upsetting.
That's funny
to
you
me.
Mention that, because I like the scene, jarring. But there's also one shot that did not need to be there where the fat guy's squishing the one guy against the bar. It's like, all right, we don't need
it
the
levity. It was almost like he was trying to outdo Scorsese by having him more have. It was very, very Scorsese-esque, right. as you'd imagine. And then it spills out into the front. And the best part that you didn't discuss, though, that you didn't bring up was as Chaz is walking away now, completely unscathed, and just completely ruined these guys. You just hear him saying, "They ruined my whole fucking lunch. They ruined my whole fucking lunch."
That. Yeah,
it's good
right.
shit. Bronx Tale, 1993.
Thought you had the narration.
I got a clip. Oh, here's the clip. Here's what it sounds like right after he locks them in. Here.
Now you just can't leave.
Now you just can't leave.
I will never forget the look on their faces. All eight of them.
Hey.
Their faces dropped. All their courage and strength was drained right from their bodies. They had a reputation for breaking up bars. But they knew that instant they made a fatal mistake. This time they walked into the wrong bar.
Fatal would also indicate they died.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That's funny you bring that up. Like, fatal is not the right, the appropriate word to use.
A grave there. Mistake, for sure.
I did. I don't even think tragic mistake would work there. Just it made a mistake. Unless someone died. I mean,
maybe someone
once
died
again,
from injuries.
There were a lot of blows that occurred. Not the best fights. If we were doing specifically bikers that get the shit kicked out of them in bars scenes, Smoking the Bandit's got a great one with the snowman.
It's a very specific
who's
list.
In there with his dog and these dickhead bikers who took a lot of abuse back in the 70s and 80s in film. These bikers did. I think they were kind of like the hipsters of their era.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, filmmakers are like, oh, these fucking bikers are like
bikers
hipsters.
Bikers were easily targeted. Clichéd.
So they're saying, "Hey, mister, your dog bit me." And he's like, Snowman's like, I don't think Snowman drives a big rig. He's like, I don't think they did. And cut to like, they're beating the shit out of this like lone trucker who's just in the bar and by himself. So he's all fucked up and he and his dog kind of like make their way out of the bar and he pays for his gas. He was just there getting gas and a beer and he hops in his big rig and he just pulls out of the parking lot and just mows down, casually mows down every single fucking bike
Amazing.
Out there, all the Harley. And they actually have the footage of the big rig going over these actual bikes. It's fantastic. And then just swings out onto the road on into the sunset. Pretty good shit.
My number one is the only thing disappointing about this list for me is that so many of the great scenes are visual, even the From Dusk Till Dawn. Like, there's a lot of fun visuals going on. And number one for me is very kinetic, very visual, fantastically directed by Matthew Vaughn, as alluded to earlier, Kingsman.
Kingsman
bar fight is fantastic. We're talking about Galahad versus Eggsy's tormentors at the towards the beginning of Kingsman. So it's a great scene for a lot of reasons. Number one, it's got that great trope of locking your opponents in the bar. Or he locks them in the bar. He's like, "Manners maketh man," and it also establishes Galahad, played by Colin Firth, is kind of as a badass because up until that point he's kind of this foppish Brit. You know, he's dressed nicely. He's drinking his beer very daintily, and you don't think much of him, and then he unleashes a whole fucking bunch of whoop ass on these guys. It really throws down the gauntlet on this movie. Like, this is the first like show stopping scene. There's a couple of other skirmishes, but this is the first scene where you're like, holy shit, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, it's kind of where, because if you recall, both of us, I think, were underwhelmed with the way that they presented this to us. It looked very almost made for Disney.
I did not want to watch this.
We did not think that it was going to be the kick-ass R-rated fun movie that it turned out to be. I still have not seen the sequel. I still have not seen the sequel, but yeah.
Neither have I.
I watched like the first 30 minutes of it. I couldn't.
That's not a good sign.
I got really
that's
bored.
Not a good
Jillian
sign,
saw it, and she liked it a lot, but she did not see the first one. So, Jillian, you got to love her. Like, I was out, on tour with the film somewhere in some town, and I come home, and she had watched three movies, and I can't get her to watch one fucking movie when I'm home. That was one of them. Was the new Kingsman. And I'm like, "What are you doing watching movies when I'm gone?" "I don't know. I felt like watching movies." I said, "Well, watch them with me."
She wanted something to remind her of you.
Number one for me. This is one of these hands down favorite bar fight scenes. Every now and again, we do a list, and I have one that's just kind of like, for me personally, is out miles ahead of the number two. This is a movie that I watched numerous times as a child because I think I recorded it on my old Betamax in the early 80s when it was showing on Z Channel or whatever, and it just became like a staple of my childhood. I probably got 15, 20 movies that my brother and I would watch over and over and over again. I'm talking about 1978 Hooper. Hooper from 1978. I've
not seen Hooper. This is Burt Reynolds?
Burt Reynolds stars as a soon-to-be washed up, on his way out, stuntman.
Stuntman, right?
Stuntman, yeah. Yeah. And it's a comedy, action, adventure. For little Andy watching this movie, I imagine this is how most bars were. Also, as a giant Steelers fan as a little kid, because my dad brainwashed me. And Terry Bradshaw was still playing for the Steelers when I would watch this movie over and over again. 1978 is when the movie was released. I was probably watching in the early 80s. Terry Bradshaw is in this scene. He plays the redneck ruffian. He's in from out of town too with his buddies. But the scene goes down like this. So it's like a shit kicker bar, right?
Okay.
And Burt Reynolds and his buddies, numerous people that you'd recognize, James Best, who is Roscoe Pico from the original
Roscoe P. Coltrane.
Original Pasco Pico from the original Dukes of Hazzard. He's one of the guys. They're sitting Cooper. At this table with a bunch of older, experienced stuntmen, and they like to get into shit, and they're having a good time. They're ordering dinner, and they're James having some Best. Drinks, and they're being really loud. Terry Bradshaw. I had never seen the guy act before. I was a little kid, right? And I knew him. He played for the Steelers, but he was actually in this fucking movie. Oh. And he comes over.
You knew him better as an actor.
He's talking to his friend, and he's saying, "Hey, I threw 50 cents in the jukebox. I can't hear the song at all." 50 cents, by the way, back in 78. That's an expensive song.
You're gonna play all night long.
That's an expensive song. So he's like, "This table's getting too loud." He didn't appreciate how loud and rowdy these stuntmen were. So he goes over and he confronts them, and he says, "Hey, I put some music. I put 50 cents in there, and I can't hear it." And Burt Reynolds gives him some lip, and he gives him a little bit of a hard time. And he goes, "Oh, you want your 50 cents? All right." And he goes, says to his friend, he says, "Hey, throw me that helmet there," because he's a stuntman, right?
Directed by Hal Needham, the stuntman.
He throws on a helmet, and he makes some noises like a bull. He stamps his feet, and then he takes a running start at the jukebox, head first with the helmet on, slams into it. You know, it's made of glass in the front, smashes, a bunch of quarters come spilling out, right? And he picks up the 250 cents, and he goes over and he, strangely enough, gives it not to Terry Bradshaw, but to his bald friend. The bald friend, too, I meant to look him up, but he's somebody you've seen 1,000 times, okay. Big, tough guy with the bald head. Oh, he might. No, he's not. Well, he might be.
Mm-hmm.
He might be. What's this? Faggot shit. It might be that guy.
Is it that guy?
I don't think it is. So next thing you know, it's on, right?
Sure.
So just some really fun banter. Like, they square off, and like, it turns out that Terry Bradshaw and his buddies are SWAT from out of town. They're in for a conference or something. And the first question is, "Hey, what are you in town for?" Terry Bradshaw says, "Like a conference." And Terry Bradshaw goes, and then Bert says, "What, a conference for assholes?" And all his friends laugh. Right. And then Reynolds counts. He goes, "All right, you guys got 10, we got 6. Looks like you're going to have to call back for backup or something along those lines," right? It's some good patter, good back and forth, good back and forth. And then he cold cocks Bradshaw. And Bradshaw just kind of like sticks his tongue out. And there's a tooth on his tongue. And and I keep calling Burt Reynolds Bradshaw. Bradshaw, I did it again.
Did it again.
Hooper turns to his friends. He goes, "We might be in trouble." So then he headbutts him with the helmet on. And Bradshaw, who looks huge in the scene, just gives a big smile. And then he palms the fucking helmet. Right. The helmet cracks in numerous places. And then the melee begins. Oh, and then, it's tables breaking. Sally Fields trying to eat this giant ribeye steak or a porterhouse. And, a guy gets like smashed right onto her table. And she has to pick up her plate. And it's
a good, good hold.
It's an old 70s bar rock 'em sock 'em like fight, what you'd expect to see in that era. And it's like, it's what I thought bars were like when I was a little kid. Damn. Until I actually went into one. Oh, I love that Hooper bar fight scene. They all become friends, Brian. They all get thrown out like through glass windows, and they're doing stunts essentially. It's very meta because they're doing stuff. And then the old guy throws himself out. He's like, "I've been throwing myself through windows since before you were born." And now Terry Bradshaw, Burt Reynolds, and then a bunch of the other ones, they're all laying in the trash and bleeding, and they're all laughing, going, "God, that's a good time." And they're like good friends.
What are the chances?
Absurd.
And I know the answer to this. I'm asking what you think. What are the chances that Mike Carano has looked for and found this very bar?
Do a slim.
I was 100%.
I don't even know if you've seen the movie.
Really? He loves Burt Reynolds.
He does. Oh. We've never talked Hooper, though.
Talk some Hooper.
I don't know if this is probably a backlot bar, if I had to guess. I doubt it's on location.
It's not like a real, you don't think it's a real bar?
No.
Hooper cannot, doesn't even come up on Just Watch. It's messed up.
It is. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. Most of the stuff you can't find on Just Watch, you can find it on YouTube in its entirety. But Hooper, if you've not seen Hooper, it's a fun one. It's an elevated Smoking the Bandit. Michael Vincent is in this as well.
Jan Michael Vincent, werewolf.
The young Jan Michael Vincent, and they call him Ski in this because they can't pronounce his name. He's got a Polish name. So they just go, oh, we'll call you Ski. He's the young up-and-coming stuntman that they're all kind of threatened by. So they give him a really hard time. But this is where he decides to fight on their side in the bar scene. And so it's a little bit of like brotherhood. Oh, I love that Hooper. Love the Hooper.
Where is this?
Bar fights. I'm done. I got a shit ton of also-rans, and I would like to hear the listener list.
Listener list, please. Hold on. Where can you watch this? This one you watched. Yeah, hard to find.
Send away.
I lost it.
Send away for it.
All right. I'll cut all that out. All right. At number 5, we have A Bronx Tale.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Number 4, the flashback scene in Airplane.
I'm glad really they made the list.
With the Girl Scouts and the entire fight scene. With
I include that movie on way too many lists, but I'm glad it made that. Yeah, and the dancing, he's got stabbed in the
old
back,
guy, yeah, like he's doing the move.
Yeah, good.
Number 3 is Kingsman, The Golden Circle.
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry.
That's the new one.
The Secret Service.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The first one.
Don't be ridiculous.
Number 2 is Roadhouse.
So, glad I made the list. Yeah, several throughout. It's one big long bar fight.
I was looking for just the one where he finally pulls out the throat, and I couldn't find that clip. Oh, so
throat-ripping?
Yeah.
Throat-ripping?
And the number 1 bar fight, as voted on by our listeners, is from the movie Dirty Work.
I didn't see that.
You know, I've never seen Dirty Work. I saw the scene with Chris Farley, and it's a great scene, but I've never seen the movie.
I've seen it so many times. It came out like at the perfect time when I was in middle school.
It's underwhelming.
I wanted to see it. Yeah. I really wanted to see it. I love the cast, but I just never got to it.
Hold on.
I don't know if it'll hold up.
Dirty.
Yeah, probably not.
Those 90s comedies really don't.
Yeah. But Chris Farley, that scene was great.
I caught half baked on HBO the other day, and that didn't hold up very well at all.
Really? Yeah. I remember it being funny.
It was really funny, but yeah, Dirty it's very dated.
Work.
Okay. All right, I see what you're doing. That's very funny.
That's
bro.
Right.
Look how proud you are of yourself. You got a big grin as you look up at me. Like, see what I did there?
See what I did?
I think I own it on VHS if you want.
Oh, good.
Speaking of which, I, dumb fuck that I am, I thought that I bought a Betamax the other day on eBay. For $20, which I should have realized.
Why would you do that?
Because I'm trying to transfer all my home movies from when I was a kid with my dad like screaming and yelling, having fits. I need to get this shit off of analog.
Yeah.
So I need a Betamax machine. I bought the manual for $20 for a Sony Betamax. Mm. I can't find a fucking Betamax that's under $1,000 on eBay or anywhere for that matter that works. If any of you have an old Betamax that works, that's tested, that you want to sell to me, Or let me rent for a couple months. I just got to transfer shit. I can't find a Betamax for the life of me. I'm going to start going to pawn shops.
They've got to be out there somewhere.
There's a brand new one and it's still in the box for $1,600.
What about your editing? Your post house in Chicago?
They're in Chicago. They don't have Betamax. They're all digital.
But that's their whole.
They don't transfer old home movies.
I can almost guarantee.
I guarantee you they don't have a Betamax.
I guarantee they do.
I wouldn't be shocked if a listener has a Betamax.
Mm.
And what kills me is my mom had two of them, and her son-in-law took it upon himself to either sell them or just throw them away just a couple years ago.
You want to do any also-rans?
Yeah, I got a shit ton.
Yep, me too.
Airplane, already been discussed. Mm. Collateral, more of a shootout, though. Kingsman.
That's a good one.
Boondock Saints is a good one. Yep. They light the guy's ass on fire. Terminator 1 and 2.
Terminator 2 especially, yeah.
Shaun of the Dead, very good one.
Terminator 1 isn't so much a bar brawl as it is some guy starts shooting, everyone wants to leave.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
That's good.
A lot of shootout, though, but that's where the guy palmed.
That's right.
The Nazi palmed the medallion. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I did.
And he got a burn much like you, so that makes me think you're like a Nazi.
That's right.
The Replacements that Logan made me watch a few months ago.
Replacements.
I completely forgot I made you watch that.
The Replacements, good bar fight scene with a rabid Favreau. Remember? Keanu goes up to him and he goes, remember how we say you can't hit anyone with a red jersey? In practice, that rule doesn't apply here. And he just goes right after the guy with the red jersey. Mean Streets.
That's right.
We don't pay mooks. Smoking the Bandit, which I already mentioned. Back to School has a goofy one for a few dollars more. 48 Hours. Not much of a fight, even though a couple guys get punched. Dusk Till Dawn, of course. And then Irreversible. However, I think the Rectum was less of a bar, more of a club, because I never saw an actual bar.
Alcohol's probably served there.
Never saw an actual bar. Yeah. At least poppers.
It's a private club, gentleman's club.
But that completes my short list.
Train Spotting, of course, great bar fight.
Good scene. Good scene.
I was so close to including Pee-wee's Big Adventure, but they don't actually fight in the tequila scene. Ah, oh, it's a great scene. Mm-hmm. When he's on top of the bar dancing.
Yeah.
I dance like that
There's
for
no
years.
There's no fighting, though.
I dance like that for years. Yeah. He avoids a fight by doing the dance. So that's all the tropes of the fight.
So
the Book of Eli, X-Men First Class, Top Secret, and Deadpool has one. Central Intelligence has actually, not a terrible movie. And of course, Goodfellas.
Goodfellas is a death scene. It's a snuff.
He doesn't
scene.
Die until later.
That's true. Yeah. It's a beating scene.
Right.
Not a fight.
I was gambling.
I don't think he throws one punch.
Out of here.
I don't think he throws a single punch.
Billy Bats? No, yeah. I don't think he gets a lick in.
He doesn't get one swing. Billy Bats.
He's blindsided.
Billy Bats gets called out not swinging.
Last week, you guys gambled on Velvet Buzzsaw.
Excellent.
At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes score was 81%. Anderson bid 86 and Brian 84.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomatoes score for Velvet Buzzsaw has dropped significantly to 66%.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I'm hearing terrible things.
Making Brian the winner.
I'll not be watching that. Anderson, I have not heard you talk about this, so I can only assume you haven't seen it. There's a documentary that Netflix has been... Like, you know, would you based on your viewing habits, you're probably interested in. And for over a year, I was like, no, I know what this
Brian,
is.
It's Oscar season. I'm trying to catch up. What are you doing to me?
I'm going to give you a film you watch at home with the wife, probably.
I know, but it's Oscar season. I'm trying to catch up.
I don't want to give you an Oscar movie.
Why wouldn't you do that?
And I said, no, and finally, based on recent events, I dove in and it was eye opening. I want you to see so we can talk about Get Me Roger Stone. Get Me Roger Stone. Fascinating portrait of an individual. You're gonna love it.
Why don't you make me watch Bohemian?
Why? No, that's a bad movie, and this is a good movie.
But I need to see the movies.
Okay, well, you can. Before. I'm not gonna prevent you from seeing movies you have to see.
You know what's funny is I'm looking at my notes and I forgot to look at my notes for Cold War. The only thing that I have written down, and it's funny because you brought up A Star is Born,
right?
As a bleak and dreary Star is Born.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
What a sell job.
It's a very bleak and dreary Star is Born. And Star is Born is considered bleak and dreary.
It's a downer a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is a bleak and dreary version of that movie.
Yeah. She's just as good as Gaga, though, if not better.
Really?
She's fantastic.
All right. That's saying something.
Cold War. Right. Thank God. I mean, this movie would have been insufferable if it wasn't for her.
Get Me Roger Stone.
Can't wait.
And we'll talk.
All right, this week you're gambling on...
You're familiar with who that is, right?
Yeah, he's got Nixon on his back.
He does have Nixon on his back. Right?
It was his the wall is his idea. That was his brainchild. Not that it's like a great genius.
You're
going to
learn a lot about this guy.
Idea.
And the best part is, like, I went into...
Do you like him? There's something about him, right? He's so awful that you kind of like him.
Yes, because he revel. He loves being the
That's
villain.
That's the problem that I had with Vice was right. Like Chaney's not even like the type of villain that's like compelling. He's just like
he's very. The thing is, like, I wonder, thinking like, oh, this is gonna be a hit piece. I already know, like, the filmmakers, you know, blah blah blah. They're gonna talk shit about him. He is a willing and eager participant in this movie. Like, he is a unique creation. You're gonna find him very fascinating.
Cool.
All right, what are you gambling on?
All right, this week you're gambling on The Lego Movie 2, the second part.
Oh, I didn't see that coming. That comes out this week?
Yep.
Shit.
That comes out this week?
I just heard a new song on the radio on my way over here that had The Lonely Island on it.
Tight.
Yeah, super cool it was called.
And it's on the soundtrack for anyone?
It sounded like it was an end credit song because they were rapping about end credit scenes.
Probably.
What do you know about this?
I know that it's made by the two dudes.
Is it the same two dudes?
Or same Miller. Two.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. However, I also skip Ninja.
Oh, the Ninjago movie?
They didn't make that one, though.
But it's Lego.
Yeah.
These guys are responsible for, or at least Lord, Phil Lord, responsible for a little movie about Miles Morales. Came out last year. Also known as Spider-Verse. Into the Spider-Verse.
See, now I just got to think about what you're going to say about this.
Everything's fucking awesome, Brian.
The first movie was awesome.
Second, Batman Lego wasn't terrible.
It was fun, enjoyable. That was your group.
Oh, I need to reach out to the people that we still need to pay that off. The Make the Baldwin Suffer. See if anyone's coming out to San Jose.
What do you mean?
Because I think 10 people bought that. You know,
oh, and didn't come?
And I think two people came.
Huh? Like, wait, to our event? To the groupers that out?
To the
there was like six people there.
Three.
Oh,
I think it's three groups.
There was a father and son for sure. Yeah. There's at least two or three
that's,
other guys.
That's yeah. one, and then two. And two. Okay. Judge was there, and Chris. Yeah. Can't believe that's when I first met Chris because like we're friends now. See him all the time. Judge too.
I have a number.
As do I.
What's your number?
1992. I mean 92.
92. Yeah. I have 82.
Ooh,
shit. Is it good? Is it going to be that good? I mean, no, the sequel can't be that good.
It's the second part, Brian.
Okay, that's a good point.
Currently, the week before its release, with 77 reviews, the Rotten Tomato score for the Lego Movie 2 is 90%.
Shit.
Feeling oh, good. Oh, you know what? That, you shouldn't feel that good. Feeling good. All that's to go down is four points.
What do you got?
3 points.
84?
82.
All right. I'm feeling good.
3 points.
Let's right. fucking blow right. this taco.
Logan, did you give me the show notes? Is that what you sent me? Yes, you did. Okay. Yes, you did. Thank you to Josh B for the listener art this week. Didn't get to hear any sick. I'm a little disappointed in that. What is that? all the quotes are. Look at all the quotes.
They're all from Bill.
That's excellent.
Pretty good.
That's excellent.
Bill, this is probably Bill's closest thing to 15 minutes he'll ever get is on our lowly little show.
That's right. You made it, Bill. Thanks, Josh B, for being a, for making our listener art this week. Thanks to our featured artists. They are the Bush Leaguers, a funk band named Machete, Janice 414, the Cameo Inn, Mr. Nisnis, La Practica di Familia. Thanks, you guys, for being our featured artists this week. Go to AndersonandBrian.com to see the listener art, to hear the featured artist, to click through the Amazon banner and do your Amazon shopping for movies, books, anything you like.
If you'd like to come out, and you're going to be out in the Silicon Valley for right. CineQuest, Big Groupers world premiere, official like setting it out into the wild, and you'd like to come see a meet Brian and myself, and
you want to see my hometown, you see my San Carlos.
It's not a good sell, Brian. And I'll take like you to see you see a live film vault. The topic we'll be doing top five Bay Area based movies.
Oh, is that what we're doing?
Top five nice. Movies based in the Bay Area.
Bay Area
makes
based.
Sense.
Nice.
And we're gonna do that live. Second time ever that we did a live show. So it should be a fun time.
Number
fun
one, event. The fan.
That'll be Saturday, March 9th. Yeah, March 9th, Saturday. So go over to AndersonCowan.com or Anderson and Brian. Hopefully sure. we'll have it up over there as well.
Discount for Patreon subscribers.
$10 for Patreon. If you're on Patreon, $10.
Thank you.
$15 for everybody else. Why don't you make the leap? It's essentially Patreon, a free month of Patreon.
Yes,
if
indeed.
You come out.
It pays for itself. The Patreon episode that's out now, the special one just for the subscribers, is top five Sundance releases of all time. And we dove deep. Dove deep.
Deep.
Check us out, The Film Vault, on Twitter and Facebook and Patreon for that matter. The Film Vault. Vote on what you want to hear on Sniff Tracks. That's coming soon. And until next time.
We do it for Van Gogh.